You're listening to Minute Impossible. You complete me. Woo!
Welcome back to Minute Impossible. That's right. We're back. No, we're not. Again, I know we keep saying we're back, but we're not. This is another hiatus episode.
We're sort of back.
Oh, Chris is here.
We're sort of back. I'm sort of back, too. Look at that.
We're not back. We're just on.
I'm back.
Chris says he's back. And Chris, you're higher than a four today.
I got the good drugs in me today. Normally, no dialysis and a good drugs today. It's that COVID test, all that lab work I had to deal with earlier today. That's what's doing it.
Okay, good. Well, you have less blood is what you're
saying. Less blood, exactly. Got less blood.
Well, we have got a special hiatus episode for you guys. This is coming out before Thanksgiving. So think of it as your Thanksgiving gift. Recently, if you are on Twitter and you follow the same things that we follow for our tweet deck and our stuff, you're always seeing Tom Cruise news about the movies and about the new Mission Impossible stuff. And one thing that always comes up in my searches is not Tom Cruise. And if you've never heard of him before, go turn off the podcast right now and go watch Not Tom Cruise. You can find it on anywhere on the internet by typing in Not Tom Cruise. He's on Twitter. He's on YouTube. He's on the international web of mystery. He's fantastic. Well, for your listening pleasure, we have actually invited on Not Tom Cruise to our show. His real name is Evan Ferrante, and he is an impressionist. He does this for a living. He does a Tom Cruise impression and other impressions for a living. And we thought, what a great idea. We should contact him and then get turned down. And weirdly enough, Evan said yes.
So right away.
So welcome, Evan.
I'm back. Since you guys started saying I'm back, I had to say the risky business or whatever that line was.
The voice is frightening.
It is. It's quite scary.
The voice is my selling point. It's my trademark. You know, I get hired as this professional voice match. People are like, "What's that? What does a professional voice match even mean?" I'm literally hired by the studios and commercial agencies to do because they can't afford Tom Cruise to do like the day to day. I get hired in his place to do that.
Oh wow!
When Tom Cruise would do a Buick commercial. And you're the one that has to come in and say, at your local Buick dealership.
Right.
Like, you have to say all the mundane lines.
Well, he probably would never do a Buick commercial. Right? Or any. I mean, honestly, have you ever seen Tom Cruise do a commercial? I can't even.
Does he do them in,
he might think he does them in Japan, maybe?
It's possible. I know that DiCaprio and all the other celebrities, like Brad Pitt, but I don't know if Tom Cruise has ever done commercials, to be honest.
That's a good question.
He's a purist. So. And obviously, I'm putting on my inflections and intonations now a little bit for you guys, you know. Like, Dorothy Boyd, thank you. You know, I miss my wife. Or Kittredge, you've never seen me. Very upset. That's great. Or red light, green light, you know. And obviously, Mission Impossible 1 is my favorite one still to this day. I love the series. Yeah, I love the series, but the first one takes the cake for me. Big fan of Brian De Palma and just that style.
Most quotable.
Yeah, and look, you have the fish tank scene, the explosion of the fish tank scene with the gum. You have Jean Reno. You have Angelina Jolie's father. What's his name?
John Voight
is amazing. Sorry, I hate that I said Angelina Jolie's father.
Great Danny Elfman's score on it too.
Oh, is that right? I didn't realize. Oh, it is.
Yeah, I listened to that score more than any other Mission Impossible scores.
Wow, that's very cool. Yes, it was kind of. And then you know. Emilio Estevez too, but
Emilio Estevez.
Anyway, but it's been a wild and zany ride to this point. I'm very grateful for the success I've had. It's been extremely stressful too. I've gone through a lot of ups and downs and you know turbulent rides. But I'm lucky to have wonderful people in my life who support me and put up with me, I should say. But
aren't we all?
Yeah, right. But I'm currently going through this. This incredible wave of success right now that I'm just amazed by. And it's kind of like I'm in the zeitgeist of just, you know, just the interconnectivity of the internet, just the tipping point and and just, you know, hitting on some things that are in the collective, you know, unconscious. And I've either gamed it really well or I've gotten extremely lucky. Because what I've done is with my career is I've done, and I'm sorry, I'm just kind of rambling on.
Go on. Just trying to get to it.
These are all questions I was going to ask anyway.
But yeah, go on.
Evan,
interject.
How'd you get started?
Interject. Oh, yeah. Right. No, you could do, look, that's perfect. But yeah, but basically, recently, for instance, I did this, and I'm not going to get into politics right now, but I made a comedic sketch, totally just satire, comedic sketch, kind of poking fun, almost like an SNL sketch, but even more, more unbiased, you know, I'm not pointing fingers at any one side, really. I'm really just making kind of fun of the overall situation, or lightening the situation of wearing a mask in public, which is a mandate in California. And when that happened, when it started happening, I put up a video called Tom Cruise Doesn't Need a Mask, because he's Tom Cruise. And it's very funny. I use deep fake technology to kind of create a deeper illusion, because I'm not a lookalike. I'm really more of a voiceover artist and an actor, and I have the mannerisms and the charisma and all that stuff, and I can couch jump and fist pump and slide across the floor of my tidy whiteies.
Is couch jumping on your CV?
Oh, yeah.
Does it say couch jumping?
No, it's not, but it should be. But my point is I just made a fun sketch about Tom Cruise being stopped in the middle of the street in L.A., by a guy wearing a mask who's kind of like, I guess, a male Karen or a Ken, even though Karens and Kens typically are the ones who don't wear a mask and get put, you know, pushed out of Walmarts and Costcos and throw a fit. But in this case, it was flipped. But anyway, it's a guy who complains about me not wearing a mask, Tom Cruise, on the street. And this video has gone super viral. I shot it 5 months ago, and it was at 8,000 views for 4 months or 4.5 months. And within a few days' time, it's currently at 3.2 million views.
Wow. That's insane.
That's amazing.
Because of anti-maskers and COVID-19 deniers, and I guess the term is COVIDiots. But I appreciate all the love and support, but it's insane the comments I'm getting from some people on the typically ultra far right. And again, I'm not getting into politics. There's far left, there's far right. I'm definitely in the middle. But these are extremists who have flooded my message boards and comment section, and they are so persistent with their claims and their conspiracy theories. But this is why I go viral, basically. That's my point. And then I did one a year and a half ago where that really set me on fire. And I've been doing this for 15 years, by the way. So there's like major lulls in my career too, but this is like a huge wave I'm riding, and it could come crashing at any moment, but I'm keeping it afloat by doing more stuff. But there was this, Justin Bieber.
As long as Tom Cruise stays alive.
Please God, Tom Cruise stays alive. And this is a good segue. As long as Tom Cruise stays alive, doesn't get me too, like there's a few things that could ruin my career.
Sure.
Justin Bieber, in the middle of the night one night, called out Tom Cruise. He was probably high as a kite or drunk, to fight him in the octagon, in the UFC octagon. He said, "Tom Cruise, let's fight. I can beat you." Right?
I remember that. Yeah.
So Tom Cruise, of course, is not going to respond. I respond. When Tom Cruise doesn't respond, I come in and I respond. And that's been kind of my trade. That's what I do. That's what I've been doing my whole career. I've kind of figured out a way to inject Tom Cruise, or me, my persona, into everyday mundane things, or respond as Cruise, and I end up getting a lot of attention. So this video that I did a video where I was taunting Justin Bieber and saying, you know, basically how he, you know, it's laughable that he could, you know, think he could beat Tom Cruise in a fight. And it went incredibly viral on Twitter, which is crazy. And I've never gone viral on Twitter before. And because of that one video, I've been working consistently. And when I mean consistently, I mean making really good money for 2 years now. I think it was 2 years ago I did it.
Wow.
It's insane.
That's awesome.
Truly insane. I'm incredibly blessed.
We don't get political on here either, other than the fact that don't be a racist.
Right.
Other than that, yeah.
Just be a decent, human
don't
being.
Don't be a Nazi. Yeah, even though Chris is from Texas, he's not one of those Texans. So
look, I have many family members on one side of my family who are deeply conservative, and that's fine. And look, I have some conservative values too. I respect people's views to a point. I mean, I'm really very open-minded. I just I have very little tolerance for certain things, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, so anyway, that's kind of like, there's so much more to say, obviously, but that's me in a nutshell, my current mindset and everything I'm going through.
Well, it's funny because the reason why we asked you on, we do voices too.
Oh, cool.
Our show is famous for voices, but yeah, we've never done Tom Cruise.
No.
Not once.
Even though you're a Mission Impossible themed show.
Never. So we do things like Brian De Palma and...
Oh, wow. And like really obscure. And, very
Robert
obscure.
Robert Towne,
the guy who wrote the movie.
Oh, my. That's hilarious and like so obscure. Like that's crazy. Yes. Robert Towne is an amazing writer.
They're bad.
Yeah.
They're very bad.
Okay. That's even funnier. Yeah.
And every year, each new director gives us a new
All the names
voice.
You're throwing out, by the way, sorry to interrupt, of the people mm-hmm. who were a part of Mission Impossible 1, or I don't even know what it was called. It was just called Mission Impossible, right?
Yeah, Mission Impossible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Are so incredibly talented from all – like they put together this most stellar company of creatives.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely. Tom Cruise put together a great team. I mean, for it to be his first film that he produced.
Yeah.
You know,
wow.
That's what he wanted. You know, he wanted that for his film.
Pretty big risk, though. It could have been a bomb. It could have been a blockbuster bomb. It actually could have been.
Especially with it was an old series. I mean, it was still old even.
And there were production problems. And
they caught flack, too. They caught creative flack. I know that I remember the TV show, people who were like real purists of the TV show hated the fact that his whole team died in the beginning and it became the Tom Cruise show.
Yeah, and that
show,
Phelps was the bad guy.
Yeah. Exactly. Right.
Shouldn't listen to this podcast.
Right. They didn't like that at all.
We don't know that. Yeah, we've gone through two and a half of the movie, well, two and maybe a fifth yeah. of the movies, minute by minute. And what we found is the first one's like technically like beautiful yeah. and wonderful, and it's just top notch. The yeah. second one is bonkers crazy.
It's yeah. so crazy, but hilarious.
Because
it's,
we love
it's
it.
Pure,
like,
it's pure camp.
It.
See, John Woo, I think, makes incredible films overseas, like his, you know, in his native, you know, language or his, you know, native,
China.
Yeah, China. Is it China? It's
yeah.
China, right?
Yeah,
Hong
Kong. Yes.
But, whenever he's made movies here in the States, like I like Hard Target or the Mission Impossible 2, I've honestly found them very cringy. But of course, and I actually walked out of Hard Target, believe it or not. Now I got to revisit it because I'm sure I would find it, you know, really fun and campy today. But it was just some of it was unwatchable, and like all the doves and everything. It just when it's mixed with American actors, I want to throw up.
And that's the thing we talked about Mission Impossible 2, that had it been a movie that was made in Hong Kong,
yeah.
in Chinese or Mandarin, we would have watched it and be like, oh my god, this is the most amazing.
That's
movie
what
ever.
I'm saying. He yeah. makes remarkable films, and he is an yeah. incredibly talented filmmaker. But there's some disconnect that happens with the it's like
the
it
English
makes
language,
it makes them
yeah.
funny. It makes it,
I think it's language. I think, yeah. I think it's his production staff was mostly probably Tom Cruise is probably an American production staff,
right?
And it just you lose something literally in translation.
Well, there's also a melodramatic nature to the Hong Kong films, because like if you watch The Killer or Hard Boiled,
yeah.
there's this
even, that's true.
Even in Face Off, he puts that sequence where
Face Off worked
Nicolas
though.
Cage,
Face Off was amazing yeah. through and through.
He's got that
amazing.
Sequence
Nicolas
with
Cage.
Yeah.
Nicolas Cage yeah. going crazy in the gunfight with
yeah.
Somewhere Over the Rainbow playing.
Oh yeah, yeah, you know, yeah, yeah.
That's the sort of thing that he
genius
does.
Genius moves. Yeah, yeah.
This is the sort of thing he does in Hong Kong films.
Yeah.
That are like, oh wow, this is amazing. But
juxtaposing,
if you do that, in,
yeah.
you do most of that in English films, it's yeah. like, man, this is cheesy. But
yeah.
you know, he has a way of pulling it off, and I think it
No, but
top-level
but
American
in retrospect,
face
he
off, though, yeah.
in retrospect, he really did pull it off, though, with Mission Impossible 2. Like,
yeah.
there are times where I've been like, oh, that was pretty bad. But I really do love it. I mean, you have the rock climbing scene. You mm-hmm. have, like, the tango
Ica.
Scene. You have, like, obviously, what's her name?
Danny Newton
is amazing in it and just gorgeous.
Go back and watch. Yeah. Go out and watch 2 and then watch 3, and you'll be like, 3's not as good as I remember.
Interesting.
And 2 is
better than
I thought.
Than
I remember.
Yeah.
But 3 is Philip Seymour Hoffman, right?
Yes.
It is the shining
and
light.
And it's
you,
the rabbit's
you're
foot. Yeah,
we,
yeah.
Yes.
See,
the
I mean,
foot,
yes. this one, but he was a terrific it's villain, the, though. He was so good.
Oh, yeah.
And
oh, yeah.
and terrifying, yeah. too. Like, I found him really.
He's eating the scenery. It's he's
Yeah,
great.
Yeah, he's great.
But the direction is weak.
Interesting.
For JJ's
first movie. And Philip Seymour isn't in that movie nearly as much as you remember him, because he's like in the opening and then he disappears for like half an hour, 45
sure.
minutes, and then he comes back, and you know, he keeps
sure.
disappearing throughout the movie because he's not.
But you craved
really
him when he was
villain.
When he was
yeah.
gone. You craved
exactly,
him.
Exactly, yeah.
And then who was the girl who played Felicity? What's her name?
Carrie Russell.
Yeah, like I do remember that opening scene being really awesome and like that impactful.
Was. And that was JJ's mark at the time.
Totally.
He could make an opening, like an opening salvo of shots that make you go, "Oh man, they just killed off a guy!" Like,
oh yeah, but if you take away Philip Seymour Hoffman, it was definitely one of the weaker films for sure.
You said that number one was your favorite.
Yeah.
Now this is a very important question that we talk about a lot. What's your favorite Tom Cruise hair?
Oh yeah, yeah.
There are many through
that's
these
a
movies.
That's
and it
a,
doesn't have to be these.
No
movies.
One's ever asked me this before. It's funny because I get a lot of flack personally because I've stuck.
Look, Evan, we are going to ask you the questions that are going to rocket you to 5 million
so, look,
views. On that
you're seeing my hair, but no one else can see it right now. But see, I'm 41 years old, and this is what happens. I'm losing my hair, you know, here and there. So
yeah,
you
got the Chris,
I have,
you got the Jonathan.
Exactly.
It's fine. We all got the same.
But hair. I have a wig that I've been wearing, and I'm sure you've seen it. It's the only wig I've had for 15 years of doing this. I do wash it on occasion, but not often. But
I was about to say, what does this smell like? Yeah. That's
the
first thing we also ask.
It smells like pure Cruise.
The point is, it's not easy to find great wigs, by the way. It's very hard. You got to spend a lot of money for a good custom wig. It's not easy. And I've been looking. I've been looking for better wigs, but also, what am I going to do? Find like 20 different wigs? I mean, I could find his current hairstyle, but I'm not going to get every single wig. They're also not, wouldn't use them as much. I wouldn't utilize them. Like, no one really asks for Last Samurai that often. No one asks for, Legend or whatever. My point is, it's just, I got to stick with the popular ones. I got to stick with Mission Impossible, Top Gun, Risky Business, and just regular, you know, modern day Cruise. But anyway, my favorite Cruise hairstyle, honestly, I got to say, and it kind of goes in line with the other hairstyle when I was younger that I admired and I wanted to get because I love the movie so much, was Speed, you know, Keanu Reeves. I loved his haircut, super, super short, perfect, like, you know, whatever you call that, like a flat top or whatever.
Yeah.
But Cruise in Mission Impossible 1, I loved his hair super,
really?
Super short. Super
more
short.
Than two,
well, look,
more
two
than
Ghost Protocol. Look, 2 was glorious, obviously. He has great hair, okay? He has great hair in Jerry Maguire. He has great hair. Perfect. Like almost Hugh Grant hair, but he's not. But the first movie was like admirable. Like I wanted that hair. Yeah. I wanted to rock that hair and be like, and come down from, that was another thing. So the Mission Impossible 1, no one has ever replicated the beauty of coming down from the ceiling and the sweat beads and the temp, and just, it was the perfect scene.
We called that hairstyle tactical and tight.
Tactical and tight. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But
so if you ever have to use that, you please feel free to use it. Tactical and tight is the Mission Impossible 1 hair. It's tactical
but
hair. It's like, won't get anything.
In your opinion, though, in terms of an overall sequence of suspense in any Mission Impossible movie, was there anything greater than him coming down from the ceiling and that whole sequence? Like, seriously, I'm talking about a sequence. I'm not talking about the most exciting bits. I'm not talking about, like, running in the sandstorm.
No.
I'm not talking about the Burj Khalifa. I'm not talking about any of those things that are great. I'm talking about the best sequence. Like, Terminator 2, like the best sequence, okay?
Yeah. It's exciting, but remember, we watched it 1 minute at a time with no sound.
Oh.
So for 2 weeks, we literally watched 2 weeks of episodes with no sound. It's about
why do you watch it with no sound again?
No, there's no sound in the movie. There's no soundtrack.
Yeah.
And those quiet scenes, nothing's happening. Watch it, and literally, it's just him lowering himself slowly in complete silence with like a little...
But the stakes are so high, you know?
Yeah, oh yeah.
Like
the first time we've seen something like that in a Mission Impossible movie, the first time it's ever happened, it really kind of adds another level to it. Plus the homage to 2001 that they're playing.
Oh yeah, and you're in the Pentagon. Like you're in the Pentagon, yeah. Right?
And when the knife strikes, and you're just like, oh, finally we can all talk.
But right
like,
when the door opens,
yeah,
right
no
when
one
the door
breathes
opens,
in that,
it
no
was a
breathes,
it was a perfectly right. constructed scene. I'm not kidding. Like Brian De Palma did such a good job. You know, Brian De Palma gets a lot of flack. I use flack. That's my word for today. Because he's been. I don't know if you know this. I saw a Brian De Palma documentary, and I might have known this before too. But he has been kind of ridiculed his whole life for basically ripping off Hitchcock. Do you know that?
Sure.
Yeah, I saw that Noah Baumbach documentary about him.
Yeah, but he's phenomenal.
Yeah.
Like Brian De Palma is amazing.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Oh yeah. We're big.
We're huge De Palma fans.
We're De Palma fans.
Did you ever see the Brian De Palma
body double?
Body double. Yes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I was watching parts of it the other day because I was like, I missed that scene with the drill.
Yes.
I don't remember. And I went and watched. I'm like, man, that's such a good scene.
It's so good. It's so, the villain's great.
My favorite is, by the dog. Is Blowout. Blowout is amazing.
Blowout, yeah, very good.
With John Travolta and Nancy Allen and John Lithgow. That's fantastic. I mean, beyond his Hollywood films like The Untouchables and Mission Impossible, Blowout, I think, to me, is one of those films where he just ratchets up the tension the whole time.
See, and that's another great, like Untouchables, though. And then Blowout, I actually had to revisit. I think I saw it a long time ago. But Untouchables, he did that. He actually completely parodied a scene in one of the most famous movies ever made, like a black and white film, with the baby carriage.
The Odessa staircase sequence.
Yet he did it in his own way. And it was fucking amazing. Oh, yeah. It was amazing. Yeah. He killed it.
Yeah, that movie. That's
Sean Connery.
It's my favorite. Oh. Yeah, Sean Connery as a Chicago Irish.
I think he won Best Supporting Actor.
Best Supporting Actor. Yeah,
he did. He did. My son was quoting it to me the other day. I didn't know. My oldest 16-year-old knew lines. He was like, I can't remember what he said. He was like, that's line that he
Chicago
says.
Chicago way.
No, what does he say when he comes back down from throwing the guy in the white suit off the roof?
Oh, wow.
He's in the car.
My son said
Where's
that to
Nitty?
Me. I'm like,
In the car.
I'm like, are you?
And Nitty was a great. Nitty was such a great character. That actor, his face is like perfect for a villain. The best, one of the best villain faces. Yeah.
All right, Evan. Yeah. Here's one for you. You were saying earlier you get these anti-masker people. What I'm fascinated by, and I've actually commented on your Twitter about it, are the people that think you are Tom Cruise.
Oh yeah, yeah.
I would love if you have. It doesn't have to be something that like makes fun of them, but if you have any good stories, like some of your best stories of people,
The best one
mixing it
the
up.
Best one I got is that. So normally, again, I'm not a lookalike, but I when I put on my wig and glasses and I have like an entourage, or I have like a, you know, security detail, publicist surrounding me, or I get out of like an SUV and I go to a restaurant, which I've done before. I was part of a music video where they tried to spoof that it was real. It was really Tom Cruise, and they called up different paparazzi around town and tried to fool them. And some of them were fooled for a little bit, but basically it was just a ruse to get a lot of press. And they did. And for the music video, for this artist. But and then I went into the restaurant. We had hidden cameras everywhere, and we also went to a club and went to a strip club. So it was like Tom Cruise in a strip club. It was pretty hilarious. But point is, that was like, you know, one example here. But the no one really gets fooled in America. We're, you know, a little more on guard about that. But in Europe and overseas, I was in New Zealand. I honestly fooled about like 60-70% of everyone I came into contact with. They're just extremely gullible, especially if it coincides with Cruise actually shooting in New Zealand when I was there, or just being there or scouting locations and there was some press about it. And all it takes is just someone tipping off the press about Cruise in New Zealand, which is what the company that hired me did. And the second I got off the plane, there were rumors, and I was in the press immediately with like some pictures. I wore like a ball cap and some sunglasses, and they were like, is it or is it not? Is it not? And then I hosted the 24-hour film festival in New Zealand, and many people there believed they had gotten Tom Cruise to host the festival with one of the other New Zealand actors, the Kiwi actors. And then afterwards, I'm talking to people there, and also I'm just going to jump ahead in London for this like motorcycle conference. I did a job for this company there. And so many people, especially from small towns in England, completely ate it up, and I didn't have the heart to tell them. Like I'm in character completely, fully. That's why I'm hired. And but you know, usually I break if someone kind of like is talking to me as if I'm an impersonator. But if they're talking to me genuinely as if I'm Tom Cruise, and they're you know, their day is made, their year is made by talking to Tom Cruise, I'm not going to blow it and ruin it for them and rain on the parade. You know, so I completely go deep into Tom Cruise when I do that.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So it happens more than you would think, but mostly overseas.
Yeah, you've seen Twitter. There's a
with Twitter and YouTube, again, with conspiracy theorists too, there are people who have had crazy theories about, like, you know, you know, it's really Tom Cruise putting on a face. These elaborate things, like he's playing Evan Ferrante. Who is Evan Ferrante? Evan Ferrante's just a, you know, this maybe he was cloned by Scientologists. Someone said that the other day, and they weren't kidding. Oh my God. Like there are some insane.
You know, that's people. Not a bad gig, Evan. If you want to keep working, that's not a terrible gig.
I know, but I don't really want to.
Well, there's our pitch for our movie right there. It's Dave, but instead of Dave, it's Tom Cruise.
Yeah.
And Tom Cruise dies on the set, and we get Evan to replace him, and nobody knows the difference.
Well, I could certainly, again, with deepfake technology, and I've done this several times in the past year, I've embodied Cruise because all that's really missing is the voice, and I got the mannerisms, and then there's the face. So you throw on the face, the digital face mask, and then
that's where I saw you first. I saw you on I can't remember the YouTube. It was the guys who build things.
Yeah, Corridor Digital. Corridor.
Yeah,
they're like the VFX guys, and they had me on to do a whole episode on deepfake, and they featured me as the kind of guinea pig.
Yeah, that was the first time I saw you, and I was like, holy shit.
That was pretty cool. And that was the beginning. Like, I thought that sketch that I did was like probably one of the best and funniest things I'd done because it was all improv, and I'm really proud of that. But that was early on in deepfake. Like, deepfake has been used for porn and stuff, but that was like early on with deep.
Right, Chris? Yeah.
What? I don't know what you're talking about.
But that was deepfake with entertainment, and not many people had seen it. Or, you know, people aren't really awake to that yet or weren't awoken to it. But it's come such a long way since then. In fact, nowadays, and usually a deepfake technician, there's like, you know, 10 of them around the world that I can name that are like the best in the business that, you know, have like really souped up computers and you're just basically teaching the computer over and over, like the algorithm, the AI, to be better and better and better at creating a Tom Cruise mask or whoever. But now they have an app, and I've been using it for a year now. And I can just get it instantly, deepfake instantly. I don't need anybody. I just do it myself. I record a video, submit it. I get it back in 2 minutes. So it's truly insane. And I like to think I've coined the term. I haven't been credited yet with coining the term, but I call the whole thing that I do cautionary entertainment. And maybe it's been used by someone else in some other arena or field, but I use it for deepfake because it's entertaining. But it's cautionary because at some point, and it probably has already been used for nefarious means, but it's going to be used in political arenas and to manipulate and deceive people.
It's Mission Impossible stuff. It's Mission Impossible science.
I do pure parody and satire, but even the parody that I do, like I have, you know, not just the video with me that's gone viral now, me not wearing a mask, that's deepfaked. They're heightened and sensationalized versions, but people still believe that it might be Tom Cruise because it's still somewhat rooted in reality, like a Black Mirror episode. I've done some other videos that are ridiculous, like me walking down the street as Tom Cruise and giving someone shit, pun intended, about not picking up the poop from their dog. So like their dog takes a shit, which happens to everybody. It's very relatable. And he doesn't pick it up. And I'm like, hey, come back here. Don't run away. No, come back here. And I'm kind of emulating that moment where he was squirted with a squirt gun in an interview. And he pulls them back. And he's like, no, you squirted me with a squirt gun. Why would you do that? Why would you do that? And he tells his sister, no, I got this. No. Come back here. Don't run away. And he grabs the guy. He grabs the interviewer. So I did the same thing with this dog walker, who's my friend and my next door neighbor. But we're acting, obviously. And people believe it's Tom Cruise stopping some guy in the street, you know, giving him shit about picking a poop or not picking a poop. People believe anything. People believe what they want to believe. They see what they want to see. And deepfake definitely is troubling in that respect, in that the illusion is sustained, you know?
Yeah. Also, you give people an outlet that Tom Cruise doesn't. Tom Cruise does.
Right.
Very few interviews. Tom Cruise does not do promotions of things. Yeah. He does not show up at things. Yeah. He is who he is, and that's cool, whatever you want to be. But you're like, you're the Tom Cruise we can all walk up to and be like, hey.
I'm the approachable, accessible, open book Tom Cruise. The Tom Cruise, I'm basically, you know, celebrities, they're just like us, like that kind of like Us Weekly thing at the end of the magazine. I'm basically that.
They go to grocery shop.
Yeah, like I did a series for this Australian magazine called Pacific Mags back in like many years ago at the beginning of my career. They hired me to do 3 commercials for them, and the premise was that they chose. I gave them like 10 great ideas, and they chose the straightest, most risk-averse idea, and that one was a day in the life of Tom Cruise, and I basically modeled it after celebrities. They're just like us. I took like, and maybe that's why they did it, because they were kind of like a trash magazine like Us Weekly, but basically it was like Tom Cruise getting a coffee in the morning, what would it be like if he was ordering a coffee with a barista at Starbucks? And then the next one was Tom Cruise buying some salmon for dinner. So he was in the fish store buying some salmon, and he does the whole "the fish are coming with me" scene, you know, in Jerry Maguire, but with real fish. And then that night he's on the red carpet, and it's Tom Cruise on the red carpet, and he's there with Katie Holmes at the time, or Kate Holmes, and she's towering over him. So in the video, it's like, it's me as Tom Cruise on a red carpet, and you don't even see Katie Holmes' head. Her head is like somewhere beyond the camera. But that's, so basically I inject Tom Cruise into mundane scenarios, like I said earlier, and that's been the basis of my career for like 10 years now. I found that is the, because of what you said, he's a very private individual. We don't really know who Tom Cruise is. I'm a window into his world. I've created a, I don't want to sound like too arrogant about what I've done, but I've built out his universe in a way almost like a transmedia specialist would do at Storyteller.
You've built him a what's the word I'm looking for? A personality.
Yeah, exactly.
We know Tom Cruise has a personality, but he's very guarded. Yeah. And some people say when he does movies, he's a blank slate and he becomes whatever he needs to become. You're basically an affable guy that's nice, and you're just like, oh, yeah.
And I highlight his eccentricities. I focus on his big laugh and then getting really serious. And then I do like a heightened, exaggerated version of him because it wouldn't be fun otherwise to do it over and over again, just perfectly serious. And I can do that. I can do it really pitch perfect if I wanted to, but it's no fun. So it's best to focus on like the Matt Lauer interview or the Oprah couch jumping bit and things like that, where Nicolas Cage is at the top of his game. Like, that's what I want to do. I want to do the Tom Cruise in those kind of moments.
Evan's going to tell us we're glib?
Oh yeah, you're being glib. Exactly. Well, you don't know the history of being podcasters. I do. I studied it. You know, it's just why wouldn't I do that Tom Cruise? It's the best Tom Cruise.
Exactly.
Yeah, I like a condescending Tom Cruise is an interesting one because you're like,
well, yes, but I used condescending and there's another word for it too, but basically he imposes his belief systems on everybody. That Tom Cruise is very successful in terms of the work I do. Like obviously the spirited.
It's charisma. Yeah, it's charismatic.
It's charismatic, but also supremely arrogant and.
Magnolia Tom Cruise.
And it's hilarious. Yeah, Magnolia Tom Cruise, that was his best performance in my opinion.
Yeah.
But, I mean, he's done many great things. In fact, I watched Color of Money the other day, and that was great.
Oh my God, that movie's so great.
That was a great movie. And such a sequel to a great movie.
Exactly. It was a Scorsese film to top it off.
I know. It's giving me chills just thinking about it. Like, I forgot how good it was, and Paul Newman was so good. But then you have Rain Man too. But anyway, so Mission Impossible. I mean, Magnolia is definitely, I think, his strongest performance. Also because he's like stacked up against some of the greatest ensemble actors ever, and he still blows everyone away in my opinion in that one scene. I mean, there's many scenes, obviously, with him doing the Tony Robbins bit, but just him with his father is just heartbreaking. So he breaks in that movie is my point. Like he showed his levels in that movie, and he's just such a remarkable actor. People give him shit all the time about not being, you know, being one note or just being cocky. They just don't know Tom Cruise. I mean, Magnolia is a perfect example. Rain Man is great. And honestly, in terms of comedy, Les Grossman, incredible. And Edge of Tomorrow. Edge of Tomorrow is probably one of the greatest overall and most underrated films that he's ever done. But in terms of his arc that he takes throughout the movie, it's masterful.
Yeah.
I like him in, I know a lot of people hate this movie, Night and Day. I
think he's hilarious in Night and Day too, which also was not I think that's because the movie itself was not amazing. He was fantastic. No. And they had great, had great chemistry. And he
has great chemistry with everyone that he's
I think he's very careful about that, finding some on screen that he's great on screen leading lady or whoever that he's great chemistry with, because I really can't recall anyone he's had bad chemistry with.
No, neither can I.
So I was looking at your website, and it says, you know, like, with the things that you'll do. You were talking about wigs. I think it's funny. Not funny. That's not what I mean. When I saw that you do Interview with a Vampire.
Yeah.
Tom Cruise. I said, in my mind, first thing I thought was, ooh, that's something I need, because in my mind, that's more work than, because obviously you have a close voice already. You do his mannerisms and you do change how he speaks in with an inflection.
Claudia, you've been a very naughty girl.
but to do to do Interview the Vampire, yeah, you're a different character. That's not Tom Cruise. That's the one movie
that's
where
very
you can
true.
Look at and go,
that's very true.
That's not.
He
Tom
even
Cruise.
Has like
that's
a
Tom
he,
Cruise
he has like a, an accent too of sorts, like almost
yeah,
like a
yeah. He, or, it's a shitty British.
Yeah,
accent.
Yeah, some, yeah, some yeah, yeah, or just like a very high society accent, you know.
Yeah, because yeah. He calls Louis.
Yeah, Louis, you know. That movie's great. It's
that,
campy.
Is that
it's so
one,
campy, but
have,
it's great. Well,
you have the outfit
right,
for it?
So I've only done that, to be honest, once, because it's, again, an undertaking to get the outfit and the makeup. Someone came over, a makeup artist, and was like, I got a very funny idea. Let's do something based on, you know, Lestat. So I did that. But it's the same thing with Les Grossman. I'm asked to do that quite often. And I do the bit. I do, like, the, you know, the Pan Pacific bullshit bit and, you know, take a big step back and literally, fuck your own face! You know, I do that. But I can't get dressed up in a fat suit and a bald cap and it's just too much work. Fat fingers, like,
and the forearms.
You know, Tom Cruise was like, I want to do this, but as long as I have fat fingers, he said that. So it's just too much work, but I love it and I respect it. I just, if someone wants to pay me and hire me to do it, yeah, of course. You know,
listeners, if you want to pay him,
yeah,
he will put on a fat suit.
I'll do most anything for money. It just depends. Oh. You know? The creative has.
Well, that's well, why you're on a podcast.
But no, but
we make tons of money on podcasts.
No, but I liked your guys' vibe, and I big or small, like, I really just want to work with people who have like a cool thing going and like are passionate about it and are excited about it. Otherwise, I have to work with good energy, basically. But and that's how I am today with any creative, because I get asked to do stuff all the time. And again, I'm riding a wave, so, you know, it could be the opposite of that next week. But I literally get an offer every day to do something, and it could be big or small. But I don't discriminate. I have said no to big companies. I've said no to small companies, and vice versa. It's really all depends on who, if there's a decent director, a good creative. Obviously, pay is important, but it's less important than who I'm working with and what the scope and size, what the whole, you know, creative is.
I was saying, do you always write your own stuff?
Yeah,
or
well, I have to because, you know, being a content creator, I guess that's what I am because I do get hired, of course, but I don't get hired every single day. So I have to keep creating content for TikTok or Instagram or whatever, or YouTube, and it's really hard these days because I'm having a baby and I'm just, you know, I'm exhausted. It does take its toll on you. And I've been doing it for so long. But I do write all my own stuff, but I grapple with that because even though I've come up with some great stuff and I'm really quite skilled at improv when I'm in the zone, because when I'm not in the zone, I suck. But it's not easy to keep writing money, like golden, you know, golden comedy.
Sure.
It's very hard. And so I love when someone comes to me with a concept or a great idea and wants to see it in, you know, to fruition. Because I can't deal with the heavy lifting all the time. I really just want to focus on doing the impersonation and being in that
it's
zone.
Hard when someone says be funny as opposed to when someone says, hey, I want you to come and be Tom Cruise, but you're actually the bartender from Cocktail, but you're Tom Cruise, but you don't ever have to make a drink. Just stand behind the bar and like do jokes.
Yeah.
You'd be like, you like get your mind going,
so,
like, oh, I can do a million things.
I'm not putting down this is a good point to kind of bring up something that has been bothering me for many years, but it's also like I can't blame anybody because they don't really know this world, but there's a lot of it's common sense. But basically there's lookalikes and then there's impressionists, okay? Mm-hmm. And lookalikes, or I like to call them cosplay artists, are great. They're fun and they embody the character and they look like them and they get dressed up and they're cute and they do, you know, Comic-Con and Hollywood Boulevard and whatnot, and that's great. I applaud you. But it's very, 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 very different than an impersonator and an actor, an impressionist, or a voiceover artist who truly gets the essence of the character down and performs, that's the key word, performs live or on camera with the cadence and everything and the, you know, the essence of the character. I get that at least once a day from someone who's just like, well, you don't look like Tom Cruise. You look, but they're like, you look nothing like Tom Cruise, and they do it in all caps for whatever reason. And I'm just like, oh my God, again, I use that shaking my head emoji because it's easier than calling people out. I'm just like SMH. And then it comes up. It's like some guy just, you know, being like, well, you know, I can't even deal with these people. I just don't have the tolerance anymore to explain something that is really very easy to understand. But yeah, I go through that all the time, which is annoying.
So I was going to ask, how old were you, or when did you figure out that you could do Tom's voice?
Yeah. Well, the actual origin is basically when I went to college, Boston University, and I was 17 or 18 years old. Jerry Maguire had just come out the year before, so it's 1997. And I was put up in a really, like, it was essentially a punishment for not filling out our paperwork on time. It was a Howard Johnson's hotel, or we called it Hojo's. But about 200 freshmen were put into the Hojo's hotel and shared it with other hotel guests. And it was not a very social dorm, okay? But we still made great friends on our floor, and we had to go out of our way knocking on doors to meet people because it wasn't your typical dorm. However, short aside, it was the best experience because you could roll a keg up there. You had no security. You had free cable, porn too. And we had housekeepers too. It was incredible, like being a freshman having that.
And room service.
Room service, yeah. It was amazing. Anyway, that being said, my friend Alex Merkin, also a freshman, does a Jean-Claude Van Damme impression that's pretty sick. It's unbelievable and hilarious. Also great lines, and Van Damme has great lines. And he said to me, "You sound like Cruz, and you kind of have his mannerisms and his like, you know, his just, you know, essence. And we could do something together. We could, like, nothing professional, nothing to make money, but let's knock on dorm rooms, do it like an Abbott and Costello routine as Van Damme and Cruz, and just go back and forth, and that'll be like our icebreaker, and we'll meet women that way. We'll meet young girls that way." And we did.
That's before someone told you that women don't like impressions.
Right. So, yeah. No, but it genuinely was just like, you know, we were just doing, it was us flirting, but being really charismatic, and it was a great icebreaker. And honestly, like 60-70% of the time or more, it worked, and doors were opened, and we had fun. But that was many years ago. And then throughout college, I was known as Tom Cruise. No one knew my name. I mean, some people, my close friends, but I would do it at like frat parties and, you know, all over campus. And this was without a wig and glasses. Like, for some reason, I didn't think about putting on a pair of glasses. I just was like, let me just do this, you know, a montage of his greatest hits and performances.
That's almost better.
Yeah. Well,
because remember, at that time also, I mean, this is what, late 80s, early 90s, mid 90s. It was, you did an impression because you could do the impression.
Exactly. And a lot of impersonators don't do what I do. They don't put on a wig and glasses. They just do an impression. They're great impressionists. It doesn't matter. Yeah. It really doesn't matter. So, but I remember one time back when I was in college, Magnolia also had come out, I think, in my senior year or something, or shortly after, yeah. And I learned the respect the cock part, you know, which, if you haven't seen Magnolia and you do it for a group of people and they've never seen it, and also they're underage, it falls flat completely. So I remember just their faces were horrified when I did that moment. It just like, because I did like a montage, but then I ended with respect the cock, and it wasn't a good ending. It didn't work. But I learned my lesson there. And
you gotta know when to put the cock.
Yeah, yeah. But then
Chris, write that down. Yeah. I already got it written down.
But then years later, when YouTube and Funny or Die came about, and the internet was basically born. Well, I mean, it was born many years before, but when it was really born, when it really became like a communal kind of tool, and people were sharing videos, and things were about to go viral. Like, viral wasn't even a word yet. I started putting up videos, and my first video actually was without a wig and glasses. The only time I've ever done that, other than when I was on The Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon, because it just wouldn't have worked for the scene, because I did A Few Good Men on Tonight Show, and I just did it with, they had a hairstylist who did my hair, and they also, didn't want the glasses. So I felt naked without it, but I had to man up and do it. And then, so the first video I did though, sorry, it was, just a montage of his greatest performances. And I had like an orange pen cap to model the fish in Jerry Maguire. And I did the whole, you know, these fish are coming with me, but with an orange pen cap. And I had like a really shitty suit and tie to do Jerry Maguire. I did a lot of Jerry Maguire in that one, but I also ended in Risky Business in my underwear. And that video I think it's at 200,000 views right now. All time views, but of course it had no push, and it was done on grainy video, not professional, no marketing. But that was the first video I've ever done on YouTube. And because of that one video, I then started getting calls from Hollywood and getting flown out, and I've done, you know, hundreds. I mean, maybe, I don't even know how many videos I've done. But the one that really got me into this next, you know, stellar kind of like level was the Tom Cruise's A Cock Block series, which I've done, which I don't know if you've seen those, but you should watch them. I don't know if you smoke pot, but they're hilarious. The concept is, what if Tom Cruise was, sorry, that was my computer. What if Tom Cruise was at your party one night, it's 2 a.m, and he refuses to leave, and he's cock blocking your girlfriend. That's the scenario. And it's absolutely hysterical how it plays out. And we did 3 of them, a trilogy, because it's epic. But check that one out. That one got me a lot of attention, and I've been working a lot since then. That was 10 years ago or something.
We do a thing on the show on Fridays. It's a Fan Fiction Friday. What we started doing was we started reading. I call through horrible Mission Impossible and Tom Cruise fan fiction.
Yes.
And when we find it, we then read it aloud.
That's pretty funny. That tonight, that's pretty funny.
But I'm just saying.
But I'll look into that, because that sounds pretty entertaining.
If you ever need, I was going to say, if you ever need just ideas, for instance, Tom Cruise, Ethan Hunt fights a guy with an axe. And we're like, never seen him fight a guy with an axe.
Just Google it and someone has a story about it?
Just look up Mission Impossible fan fiction. Start there. And there's little like fanfiction.net.
Yeah, because like I always thought fan fiction was like just devoted to like young adult stuff, like, you know, Hunger Games or
it's
Twilight.
It's all over the place. Wow. Well, sometimes it's slash fiction, like it's someone having sex with somebody, but...
No, that sounds hysterical. Just, like, I would love to, yeah.
It's so bad, and so
but,
bad
but
at
it's
the
people,
same time.
But it's huge fans of Mission Impossible, mm-hmm. clearly, right?
Yeah.
Unhinged fans of Mission Impossible.
Yeah.
Ones that don't know you're not Tom Cruise. That's basically the same kind of people.
Well, that's very funny. So,
and they'll, you know, they come on, they're like, now, I don't know who owns the rights to Mission Impossible, and you're like... Paramount, dude. All you had to do was like literally look at the beginning of the movie. That's like they write in the disclaimer, so you know they're already beyond. Like they're not. They don't solve problems like normal people. They're just like, I don't know who owns this, but just wanted to let you know this is just my fiction. It's like, yeah, we all know who owns it.
So we never would have thought that this was an officially licensed Mission Impossible project. You know. Yeah. Now, real quick, one more question I had for you. You said that you'd worked. Like doing voice doubling for crews, or at least for audiences, for companies that want that
for
sound.
Trailers, yeah, for trailers, for like, yeah. Oblivion, so Oblivion, Edge of Tomorrow, The Mummy, and Jack Reacher. I did.
That's what I was going to ask. What were some of the projects that you worked on? That's awesome.
But just to clarify though, so the studio hires me to do, and this is something I learned because I never did it before, to do basically these like trailers that and a multitude of them of different variations, so that they can, that the distributor or studio can decide which one to finish and to eventually either use the clips from the movie or to with actually Tom Cruise's voice, or to have Tom Cruise fill in that one line. But they use me because they can afford to use me and milk me for all I'm worth, because I'm significantly cheaper than Tom Cruise. In fact, my tagline is, when you can't afford Tom Cruise, hire me, the next best thing, you know. And that's really what I'm all about.
So you're doing like the ADR lines that he hasn't done yet and stuff like
exactly
that
exactly yet. But the best one, and it's funny because I haven't been hired since then, was for the Mummy. And they wanted me to do the scream that he does when he's coming out of the plane.
Oh my
God. Or like the plane's falling. And it's not easy to scream. Like, first of all, it's not easy to scream in general, but screaming and matching an actor is very hard. So I'm not very good.
Yeah, because that's not the same as speaking.
It's very hard. It's super hard. And they assumed for some reason that I would be able to do it perfectly. Like, maybe there are really good impersonator screamers. I have no idea, but it's not something I'm good at.
That's also the trailer that they released without any of the music, because you could hear that scream. Like,
it was made fun of. It was a meme. It was hilarious.
Yeah.
Chris, you could start a side project of not Tom Cruise scream. And all you do are Tom Cruise scream.
Right.
Oh, I can't talk like that. I can only scream like him.
My specialty is his scream, yeah.
Well, this has been great. Yeah. I don't want to keep you any longer, Evan. This has been awesome. Yeah. Yes. I've had a really great time with you.
Well, I appreciate you guys, to Oblivion and back, to the Danger Zone and beyond, to the Edge of Tomorrow. Okay, you complete me. You're my ambassadors of Quan. The fucking zoo's closed, okay?
Wait, you didn't end with respecting the cock.
I didn't ever respect the cock. I've learned my lesson.
It's not a good finisher. Not good. Sloppy.
But thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you, sir.
Why don't you do your quickly do your plugs again of where people can find you?
Okay, I'm pretty easy to find. Not Tom Cruise is my brand name, so you can find me on Not Tom Cruise Official on Instagram, Not Tom Cruise Official on Facebook, Not Tom Cruise Official on Cameo, which is where I make some money. I do special shout outs to people. If you ever want like a fun video, I've done about
Christmas is coming up, everybody. Holidays, just so you know,
for birthdays, anniversaries, holidays, you know, for coworkers, promotion, whatever, you name it, anything that you want to celebrate. I do these videos and I have a lot of fun with it. I put a lot of work into it. And it's on the Cameo platform, Not Tom Cruise Official. And then I'm on TikTok as Evan Ferrante, but Not Tom Cruise as well. It's the same thing. And that's about it. I mean, Evan underscore Tom Cruise on Twitter, but you know, whatever. You can find me. I'm all over it, but Not Tom Cruise is my name. Evan Ferrante is my real name behind the guy.
Well, I appreciate it. Everybody, thank you so much for being listening to our show. Hope you have a great Thanksgiving. At some point, the hiatus will end. We will be coming back and talking more about Mission Impossible 3.
Thank you.
Chris will stop coughing on mic at some point.
You could have held that coughing for a little bit longer.
I know. That's Chris's brand. This is how it works.
He always ends with a cough. That's great.
Slowly dying on the show.
Uh-huh. Exactly.
All right.
So until next time, I've been Jonathan.
I've been Chris.
And I'm Evan Ferrante, not Tom Cruise. Tamaste.
Ooh, Tamaste.
Yeah, it's my version of Namaste, Tamaste. See you.